You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the SmartCast Micro Learning Podcast Series on alopecia areata, hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Kia Jones, Medical Director at Med Learning Group. This is the second of two podcasts in the series titled JAK Inhibitors in Alopecia Areata, How to Use in Varied Clinical Scenarios. Today's podcast is hosted by Dr. Amy McMichael, Professor of Dermatology at Wake Forest School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So let's get started.
Well, hello, and thank you so much for that kind introduction. I'm Dr. Amy McMichael, and as Kia said, I will be the host of today's episode entitled JAK Inhibitors, A New Frontier in Alopecia Areata Treatment. Joining me today is Dr. Jorge Larondo, clinical dermatologist and assistant professor of dermatology at La Clínica Alemana in Santiago, Chile. Dr. Larondo, it's so good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Amy. As always, it is an honor and a privilege to be here with you.
Well, I'm so excited that we get a chance to talk about alopecia areata and the new era that we're in treatment. You know, we have been both treating alopecia areata for many, many years. I don't know how many of you know Dr. Larondo, but he is an amazing dermatologist and hair loss specialist in Santiago, Chile. We worked together for the last 1 year and a half in Winston-Salem at Wake Forest. And so we have collaborated on many, many cases in hair loss. And we have a particular interest in alopecia areata and how to best treat our patients. So with that in mind, with all the things that are happening in the last 2 to 4 years on the spectrum of treatment for alopecia areata. Tell me what you think about how we need to start approaching our patients with alopecia areata. Do you have a sort of an algorithm or an approach to those patients who have mild disease, moderate disease, severe disease? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course, Amy. Indeed, it's a very exciting time for alopecia areata right now in the world. So in my approach to patients, I take into consideration a couple of things in the clinical scenario. So first is the clinical type of alopecia areata. So we know a lot about the patchy and the extensive forms of alopecia areata, but sometimes we have those like less frequent forms of alopecia that we still don't know the treatment guidelines, outlines for those patients. For instance, the alopecia areata incognito, the diffuse alopecia areata. So that's also exciting for the future. But in terms of my patients, I use the severity involvement for taking my decisions. So sometimes we use the topical, the intralesional type of treatments. And then when the scalp involvement is higher, we tend to use systemic medications. So also the treatment refractory or patients that are refractory to the initial steps of treatment, we can also use systemic medications for those patients too. And a third type of, I think, important quality to take into consideration is the velocity of progression. Because sometimes we see patients that have an unstable type of alopecia areata with like ongoing patches of alopecia every week. And those type of patients also have a complicated type of treatment.
That's right. I mean, it sounds like you really think about the patient, the individual patient, and how they're experiencing the disease. And I think we know now that alopecia areata has a lot of different looks. You know, it can really come out as a very small patch that doesn't bother a patient, and then it can be very extensive and very difficult to treat. So when you do think about systemic treatments, kind of how do you line them up in your mind? You know, we still have some of the older treatments around, things like methotrexate, things like prednisone. And then, of course, we have on the new sort of avenue of treatment, the JAK inhibitors. And how do you organize those kinds of treatments for your patients?
Yes, in my mind, we have the all types of medications that are very non-specific and very broad type of immunosuppression. So we use, for instance, the systemic corticosteroids, sometimes as a bridge for those unstable type of alopecia areata. We used to use a lot of the immunosuppression medicine, for instance, methotrexate plus corticosteroids. That was our like all type of systemic medication that had the higher yield of treatment, of response. But between those treatments, the rate of response is no over the 30 to 35% of hair regrowth. So then we have the new type of medications, the JAK inhibitors, and with that is a new, whole new era. So for me, it would be for a systemic type of treatment, the methotrexate plus corticosteroids. And if that is not working for our patients, I tend to use the JAK inhibitors.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the things that I guess some of our listeners probably are interested in learning about is, you know, how do we think about the mechanism of action for JAK inhibitors and why do they work so much better than, you know, sort of our old immunosuppressive treatments? You know, we think that, well, you're suppressing everything with prednisone. Why doesn't that always work? I mean, obviously we know prednisone is not safe to take for long term, but why doesn't it always work? And why do the JAK inhibitors work? Can you talk a little bit about the mechanistic kind of process that JAK inhibitors are working through that helps our patients a lot more than these older systemic medications?
Of course, I think that's the best question for this podcast. I think the JAK inhibitors are like a silver bullet for this disease. And I would like to talk a little about the history of this disorder. So we had in the early 2000s, the descriptions of very multiple familiar cases with alopecia areata. And after that, a couple of researchers did a lot of studies, like the whole genome sequencing studies on populations. And they found that a very specific type of immunity was compromised on the patients with alopecia areata. And after that, nearly to the 2013, 2014, they started the experiments in mice with blocking this particular type of JAK-STAT pathways. And they found that it was like a silver bullet to this pathway in alopecia areata. In 2014, was the first case published that, using the JAK inhibitor for alopecia areata and psoriasis. And 8 years later, we have our first FDA-approved medications of the JAK inhibitor. So talking about the mechanism of action, the mechanism of action includes mainly the inhibition of IL-15 and interferon gamma in alopecia areata, but also we have a complete detention on this vicious cycle of between the follicular epithelial cells and the CD8 positive T cells. So the vicious cycle of inflammation is that lead us to like the decrease in the immunoprivilege of the hair follicle. And that's why our hair loss is getting developed. So the JAK inhibitors inhibits that very specific spot. Another recognized mechanism of action is the inhibition of the CD4 T helper differentiation. So with that, we have the subsequent TH1, TH2, and TH17 type of response in alopecia areata block. So I think that's another type of, a very important type of inhibition that we manage with the JAK inhibitors.
That is great. You made that so clear for our listeners, you know, to really understand that we're really understanding the mechanism of alopecia areata now, and that's why we have these drugs developed to actually block a specific part of the pathway. You know, we have a couple of medications now approved in the U.S., baricitinib and ritlecitinib. Can you talk a little bit about efficacy? You mentioned that sort of the previous drugs that we're using, maybe we got 30% regrowth in many of our patients. What are we seeing now? You know, what are the trials showing and what are people seeing in real life in terms of how well hair is regrowing?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. As I was mentioned, the old medicines top efficacy was around 30-36% on most of the patients. So now with the JAK inhibitors, we have similar response rates between the JAK inhibitors. And also there's a big review meta-analysis of the JAK inhibitors for alopecia areata. And they've shown that at around 63% of patients have over 50% of hair regrowth with clinical good hair regrowth. And 25% of patients have 100% of hair regrowth. So in general, in overall with the JAK inhibitors, we've seen like 80 to 85% of good responses in our patients.
That's really, it's just so mind-boggling, you know, that we have this to offer our patients now. And I think you're right. This is a huge change from what we're used to. And we see very happy patients. They love, you know, getting on this medication. But one of the questions they often ask is, you know, doctor, how long do I have to stay on this medication? They want to know, is this a lifelong treatment? And what will happen to me if I do stay on this medication? So what are you telling your patients right now about needing to stay on the medicine, you know, side effects, complications, things that we need to check in on, and how do we keep our patients safe?
I say what I learned from you, Amy, that those magical words that are very true, that chronic disease needs chronic medication. So for this disease, this mechanism of action, we already know because of all these studies we mentioned, and we have this silver bullet treatment. We need to use this treatment as long as the disease is present. So in a chronic disease, so far, we need to use it chronically. And there's not like so much evidence of how we can decrease or how we can titer down or how we can combine medications in order to stop these treatments. But the thing that we know is that some patients, when they stop the medication, they start to flare again. So, and that makes sense because you're like stopping the blocker of the pathogenic pathway of the disease. So in my opinion, so far we need to use the medications chronically, maybe tighter down when the patient has their complete regrowth or the best achievable result, and then tighter down slowly and trying to achieve the lower dose that has a great result for our patients. The usual thing that patients questions is about the adverse reaction of these medications. And also I learned from you that as a group, the JAK inhibitors have low rates, but very present of venous thromboembolism, some major adverse cardiovascular events, and some malignancy. So we got to tell our patients that because the information is out there. But also I found it a very great review on those topics. And they said the same thing that you mentioned when I was studying with you. So they said that compared with placebo also had a couple of these adverse reactions, but most patients who developed serious adverse reaction had risk factors for those events. So as you mentioned to all of our patients, that patients with alopecia areata are healthier in younger patients compared to those with, for instance, rheumatoid arthritis. So the adverse reactions sometimes cannot be the same for different types of populations, but we can always advise our patients with those adverse reactions from the JAK inhibitors. And also something interesting to take into account is that the most common adverse reaction, over 5% of patients using oral JAK inhibitors show that, is upper respiratory tract infection, nausea, acne, headaches, and nasopharyngitis. So those are mild adverse reactions that we see with this type of medications. And also, I would like to add that there's another review for atopic dermatitis using the JAK inhibitors, and they compared those to our traditional systemic medications like cyclosporine and methotrexate and oral corticosteroids. And they found that the JAK inhibitors as a group showed an equal or lower incidence or rates of for malignancy, non-major melanoma skin cancer, major adverse cardiovascular events, and TBP. So I think they should be considered as equal or lower adverse reactions that are traditional systemic therapies.
Wow, that's, you know, great review of the data. I agree so 100% so much with what you say, because our patients really need to know that these are safe drugs, and even though they have to continue them long term, they're not going to be at risk for a lot of severe side effects and complications as they go forward. You know, I think we can talk to our patients about, you know, all the things that could potentially happen. We don't see a whole lot of it in our younger patients. We see a little bit of acne here and there. We can certainly, as dermatologists, treat that easily. There's a little bit of data out there about herpes zoster. Certainly, we can treat that as well. And I think that nowadays people can get, you know, vaccinations for herpes zoster if they're really concerned about that, and they can actually be well protected. And so I think everything that you said is so important for our patients to really understand, and for our colleagues to know. You know, people sometimes are a little bit hesitant to start a medication on a new medication that they're not familiar with. So one of the things I guess I would ask about also just in starting patients with alopecia areata on medication, you sort of decided that this is a good patient. This is someone who has, you know, failed other treatments. They're ready to go on a systemic medication. They, for whatever reason, do not wish to go on prednisone or methotrexate, or you feel that that is really not an appropriate treatment, knowing what we know about how well JAK inhibitors work. What kinds of laboratory tests are you going to check for your patients? And, you know, what kind of intervals are you going to use for those patients with the JAK inhibitor?
Yeah, our baseline lab test should include the complete blood count with differential, a basal lipid panel, liver and kidney functions, tuberculosis test in the beginning, and also hepatitis B and C panel. That would be my starting point for these patients. And after that, we can assess every 3 to 6 months with a CBC, complete blood count, basal lipids, and liver function. That would be my point of assessment for those patients.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. You know, we follow CPKs sometimes, and what I found is we really don't know what they mean when they go up. You know, they don't seem to mean anything. The patients seem to feel fine, and then they go down again, and then they go up again. So I think it's one of those things that we're still learning about, but I agree with you. I don't really get them anymore because I don't really treat them, and I don't know what to do with them. So I think more to learn on that, but I definitely think that, you know, the laboratory tests that you laid out are important. And I think, at least in the States, you know, the insurance companies do want those tests at certain intervals. So we really do need to adhere to them. I think as we see more patients, we'll learn about really how frequently we need to do them. You know, it may be a situation like isotretinoin where we used to do a lot of tests and then we kind of figured out that we don't have to do so many. Now, what about for kids? You know, we have one medication now, obviously, that goes down to age 12. Is there anything different about how we should approach kids with the JAK inhibitors, or anything that we should talk to parents about? What do you think is there any difference between kids and adult patients with alopecia areata?
That's a great question. I think we always are more like cautious with pediatric patients because we don't have so much data on those. But there's a lot of new studies that have included up to 8 years and above using the JAK inhibitors with a great response. A large series of pediatric patients and adolescent patients showed that over 70% of the patients with moderate to severe type of alopecia areata show good results with the JAK inhibitor medication and with no significant side effects like besides the ones I just mentioned. So I think it's a very exciting time for the new medication, the ritlecitinib, for those adolescents and pediatric patients that we have.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I think it's, you know, really just a great recognition of what we can do now for our patients. Dermatologists like to help people. And when we can help people, we are at our happiest. So this has been a wonderful discussion. I have always learned a lot about how you phrase things and how you think about things. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Lorando, for joining us today and helping us learn about the new landscape in alopecia areata and the JAK inhibitors. And hopefully we'll get you back to talk about new and different things as they arise. But thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thank you very much, Amy, for having me here with you. It's always a pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And a special thank you to our grant supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity.